Good morning. May it please the court, in getting to the consideration of the merits of this case, two lines from movies and television came to mind. The first, Groucho Marx stated in the movie Duck Soup, "Who are you going to believe, me or your lying eyes?" And on the television show Seinfeld, George says to Jerry, "Jerry, it's not a lie, if you believe it." The first line is most relevant to the use of force issue in this case, and the second to the issue of deceptive statements. With respect to the use of force, the hearing officer and up through the district court found that there were violations of the department's policy, but there were mitigating circumstances. The central issue, we believe, in this appeal is how the existence of this video evidence will affect the standard of review in this Rule 106 case. The resolution depends on comparing what is depicted in the tape and the defendant's testimony and version of the events. The existence of this evidence will influence the degree of deference ordinarily afforded to findings of evidentiary facts in administrative hearings in the absence of such evidence, and the correctness of the findings of evidentiary fact will affect the review and deference afforded to the findings of ultimate fact, which in this case was the discipline that was given to the defendant. Many of the significant facts, you believe, are not in dispute. It begins and ends on the early morning of November 20th, 2009, with the undisputed fact that a prisoner in defendant's care, custody, and control was thrown with great force across a hallway and head first into an opposite wall, sustaining a serious injury. The most important evidence is a 7-second period depicted on tape, which is complete with sound, and it shows that despite defendant's allegations of aggression, threats, and intimidation, the prisoner, although extremely drunk and unhappy about his predicament, attempted to cooperate when defendant placed him in handcuffs and put his hands on the wall while being frisked. Any swearing had stopped and was not directed toward the defendant. You can see that the prisoner kept his hands on the wall and did not remove or lower them. Defendant conceded on more than one occasion that he could not see the prisoner's hands, that moving his hands would have interfered with the search, which did not happen and was not necessary. And nor was there evidence of an attempted stare down or psychological intimidation. The prisoner had his back to the defendant most of the time.
Let's talk for a minute about this moving the hands on the wall, because I know you're saying if we look at the tape, we see that the hands didn't move. Didn't the defendant say that he heard his partner say, "Keep your hands up on the wall, keep your hands up on the wall"? And if that's in fact what he said, wouldn't that provide him with a reasonable, albeit maybe wrong, basis for believing that the inmate didn't have?
Well, at some point that stopped, and I think more important is what I just referred to, is that had he had any sense that his hands were coming off the wall, he would stop the frisk. But he continued to do that unimpeded until they eventually left the cell.
Okay, well, I guess what I'm struggling with is how we can say that the videotape absolutely precludes any reliance on the defendant's subjective sense of what was going on, whether the inmate was tensing his muscles or threatening him or who knows what.
Well, that was just one of the many statements that the defendant made to justify the conduct. And I believe many of the ones that we referred to can be verified from his own perspective and not from circumstantial evidence that he might have gleaned from this other officer, who at one point left and walked down the hall while all the rest of this was going on.
So along those lines, what Judge Vogt was saying, we have to afford discretion typically to the hearing officer if there's competent evidence in the record. I think you would agree with that.
I would.
And so the issue then turns on whether the video evidence, which is what I know what you're relying the most heavily on, shows that the findings made by the hearing officer were incorrect. But to reach that, we have to review the videotape, which we've done, and then clearly conclude that it clearly contradicts or utterly is discredited by the record, right?
That's correct. This is a case of first impression, but that is the legal standard and why we say this case is different than one in which there's a credibility issue that the hearing officer has to decide based on two parties, essentially, version of the events.
So, counsel, if we are unable to conclude that the videotape completely and clearly contradicts the witness testimony, is there anything left of your case? Or do we have to make that assumption for your side to prevail?
Most likely. I would concede that. If you believe that what the officer was saying, the defendant, was not just false, although there's lots of evidence of that it was intentionally false, that it was changed several times, it was an evolving standard, and that, as we pointed out, what it is in the record, and that if that's the case, then you have the ability to find that the hearing officer, the board, and the district court's decisions were arbitrary and capricious because they were not based on sufficient facts in the record. Ordinarily you don't re-weigh the evidence, but you do have the opportunity that you don't have in other cases to see whether the findings that were made are supported by what actually happened. And if that's not the case, then you have the authority to reverse and reinstate the decision of the department. As we pointed out, with respect to, and I won't go into all of the matters in the record, with respect to the deceptive acts, there was a finding there was no violation at all, even though the defendant immediately went into essentially a spin mode after this happened, first reporting that based on the report of his supervisor who spoke to him that morning, that the prisoner had fallen backwards and injured himself, and gave the impression to the sergeant that the prisoner was solely at fault for his injury. And then the story changed regarding pulling his hands up and falling out of his grip and slipping in a puddle. And then once he got into internal affairs, and even though he had the opportunity to view the video, he did not change his version, and instead he said that the drunken prisoner was aggressive and was physically resisting and flexing his muscles, that he was afraid of being struck, and that finally at the pre-disciplinary meeting, at the first time he brought up this issue about being concerned about the prisoner going for his gun. He was not disciplined simply because these were false statements. They were intentionally made at various times, including attempting to influence an internal affairs investigation. And he continued to do that despite having the opportunity to review the best evidence of what occurred and having an opportunity to change his testimony in any particular way. This was not mere negligence or inadvertence. The defense, I believe, that was true might be good for television, but it's bad for business and the environment of a jail. As we indicated, there is no control in Colorado law on point as to what extent video evidence will influence the standard review, but the standard, as Judge Roman set forth, is what we set forth in our brief. And the evidence also thoroughly impeached evidence relied on by the hearing officer and the board from Deputy Compton, who went down the hall and returned just as the point as the prisoner was traveling across the hall and head first into the opposite wall. She did not testify in the case, and she was neither in a position to observe, much less describe, the most significant events that occurred.
Regarding her failure to testify, I believe you indicated in your brief that the opposing side could have called her, but didn't. Couldn't your side also have called her?
We could have called her. We could have called her once we found out that at the last minute that She wasn't going to testify.
And that wouldn't any written statement that she may have submitted still be admissible in these proceedings, which aren't bound by the strict rules?
Well, they could be considered on the effect of the decision maker, who was Deputy Manager Kilroy, but not necessarily for the truth of the matter stated. And when she reviewed it, her conclusion was that Officer Compton was not in position to be able to say that what happened immediately before the prisoner was thrown into the hallway actually happened.
Okay, but you're not saying that because it was hearsay, it couldn't be considered for the truth?
Not for the truth of the matter stated. I mean, that is the Zamora case, and that was a federal court case, which, and sometimes that comes the other way, in which a decision maker gets a statement from someone that doesn't testify. So it might be a prisoner who's a witness. And what they've said is that it is relevant for state of mind of the decision maker, but not necessarily for the truth of the matter stated. I didn't come up with that distinction, but we believe that that's what the law is. Because the board's findings of evidentiary fact lack support in the record, the broader standard of review was also effective for findings or conclusions of ultimate fact, of which discipline is one. And the court must determine whether the record contains sufficient evidence showing a reasonable basis in law for the board's decision. And the standard for discipline in the career service rules is it cannot be clearly excessive, and the use of clearly signifies some substantial deference to be given to the agency's decision. The care, custody, and control of prisoners is the department's most important function, and telling the truth is one of the most important attributes of a law enforcement officer. The defendant's actions severely compromise both of these core values and merited the most severe discipline, and the termination was within the range of alternatives available to the reasonable and prudent administrator set forth in the Vukovich and Atkins cases, and also in the Weeks case.
Counsel, the Atkins case was a state personnel board case. Does that distinguish it from the career services rules in terms of the alternative, the remedy being within the alternative range?
I don't believe so. I believe it stood for the standard of review that courts have to review administrative decisions. So I don't think the fact that it came from the state, I don't think there was anything factually or involving the state's system that would differentiate it from the standard review that should be applied in this case. Well, we believe that the city has met its burden that the board's decision adopting the hearing officer's decision is arbitrary and capricious and an abuse of discretion. And the decision substituting a 10-day suspension for the termination must be reversed, and the department's order of dismissal must be affirmed. Now, before I sit down, I want to explain, and I apologize to the court and also the council, that when we filed a supplemental authority, there was a case attached to it called Gutierrez, which was a district court case, and I apologize again. We filed an original draft of the citation, and we didn't reference the one that had an explanation as to why it was filed. All I can say is you don't have to read the whole thing. The most significant parts are pages 18 to 22, which give a court the authority. If you were to find that some of the allegations were proven, should have been proven, or they should have been found to be proven, and some of them were not, and you don't believe that you have the ability to decide what the appropriate discipline is, then you can send it back to the board you can remand it to the board for their consideration. So I thank you, and save my minute 17 for rebuttal.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Chip Schellenberger. My registration number is 41922, and I represent Matthew Groves.
Mr. Schellenberger, do you also represent the board?
The board?
Yeah.
We didn't file our brief on behalf of the board. I think the board is probably in line with our arguments that we don't formally represent the board.
Thank you.
Your Honor, this 106 appeal really isn't about using video evidence to disprove someone's recollection of events. It's about two things. The hearing officer, number one, found that the department failed to prove numerous of the violations that they relied on in imposing the discipline, including that Mr. Carruthers intentionally lied about the events. That's number one. And number two, the department misapplied the disciplinary rules. And I'll start with the second one because it's a straightforward rule and I believe it's dispositive. Career Service Rule 16-20 says that the purpose of discipline is to correct behavior if possible. And to that end, the agency must review the employee's record, tailor a discipline that reasonably relates to the severity of the offense, and to impose a discipline of time, duration, and type that will bring about the desired conduct. And the hearing officer in this case found that Ashley Kilroy, who was the acting manager of safety at the time who made this decision solely, took a no-tolerance policy with respect to these events and never considered whether Mr. Carruthers could be rehabilitated or his behavior could be corrected. That is a finding of fact by the hearing officer, which under the Career Services Rule is binding absent clear error.
So I was asking your counterpart a little bit about the Atkins case and the state personnel rules and so forth and whether there are differences. And the reason I was asking, and I'll ask me the same question, is here we have the hearing officer finding that there was excessive force. So why isn't termination within the range of possible alternatives for the appointing authority in that case?
For exactly the reason I just explained, the rules set out what the purpose and the way that the discipline is to be imposed. And in order to get to what a manager of safety might consider to be an appropriate termination, they have to take into consideration these goals. They have to look at the record. They have to try to see if the employee can be rehabilitated and design something that affects that result. And the record in this case supports the hearing officer's finding that Ms. Kilroy never followed those rules. She testified that she never considered the 15 months that he continued to work without incident. She stated that his conduct was presumptively fireable. And she also stated that one of the purposes of discipline is not to correct Mr. Carruthers, but to scare other employees into compliance. And so those are the facts on the record that authorize the hearing officer to modify the discipline imposed, because the discipline was imposed based upon a misunderstanding or a misapplication or a failure to apply the disciplinary standards that are set forth in the Career Services Rules. So that kind of wraps up my first point. Second point is that the hearing officer also found that the department failed to prove more than half. I'm drawing a blank on the number, but it's somewhere between 12 of the 15 violations, I think, that were the basis for the discipline, including that Mr. Carruthers intentionally lied about these events. Now, again, that finding that he did not knowingly misrepresent the facts with the intent to deceive is a finding of fact by the hearing officer, which is binding absent clear error. And the city really doesn't challenge the finding. What it does is challenge the accuracy of Mr. Carruthers' recollection of events. And in their own words, they say the video evidence discredits his version of events. But the video in no way speaks to Mr. Carruthers' intent or his knowledge. And that is the standard for a dishonesty finding. And that is the finding that the hearing officer determined that the department had not proven by preponderance of the evidence. And I'll point out that in the city's brief, they really only attack four evidentiary findings by the hearing officer. That is that the inmate pulled back, that he slipped in the water, that the slip in part caused his fall, and I'm again drawing a blank on the fourth one, but they were stated to be sort of intertwined. And as the court pointed out, or as I will argue to the court's point, the video evidence really doesn't disprove clearly any of those issues. Clearly, we know there was water on the floor. We have testimony and we have video evidence of him tossing a styrofoam cup. We have a very quick movement as he's being pulled out the door, but in my brief, I tried to freeze the frames where you can clearly see a quick jetting out of the leg. So that, to me, indicates at least the possibility of slipping in the water, and that the water would be one of the many causes that contributed to the inmate's fall. So the video evidence really doesn't establish clear error. At most, it establishes a evidentiary conflict. But that's insufficient to overturn the hearing officer's decision, which requires a finding of clear error. And so we ask that the court affirm the hearing officer and the board's decisions. Thank you.
In discussing the what the defendant thought were the issues, at the very end, he got to the real nub of this, which is on the standard. It's not just whether you think somebody can be rehabilitated. The first thing is the seriousness of the offense. And we have two serious offenses here, both of which we used to refer to in the arbitration arena as industrial felonies, and that the progressive discipline is not necessary to terminate a city employee if these circumstances justify that. The findings also that were referred to at length by defendant's counsel were findings of ultimate fact, and that they're not entitled to the same type of deference of findings of evidentiary fact. And with respect to the argument that, well, the video doesn't show whether the statements were intentional or not, it's axiomatic that circumstantial evidence is going to be the proof, because very seldom does anybody come and say, yeah, not only did I not tell the truth, but I intended to deceive you. But this kind of conduct, intentional, based on circumstantial evidence, does impede the ability to investigate these cases in this slide series. Thank you.
Thanks to both counsel for your excellent arguments. This case will stand submitted, and an opinion will issue in due course.